Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and Chris Prytower.
Let's welcome back Ryan Poplava, here to talk about the catalysts and drivers that move the financial markets this week.
Hey, Chris. I'm going to talk about the catalyst, but I'll also add some technical analysis as well, since we had no guests this week.
Yeah, there were no plans at all this week, but I'd like to thank you and Jim for doing a podcast anyway when normally you do go on break, so I'm sure our listeners do appreciate hearing your take.
It's no problem at all, Chris. We love what we do, even when there's news or no news. But sometimes in the financial markets, the news is the price action, and the correction has been just relentless over the past 2 weeks. Concerns over growth last week combined with the weak flash purchasing managers index for the U.S. and Europe. And then on top of that, we've got the weak Chinese economic data. That all set the tone going into this week. And there was just a lot riding on the hopes that we might get a dovish Fed just in the face of that recent correction, but what they answered back with, barely a flinch this week.
So let's dig into the week's Fed meeting, since that appears to have been the major catalyst this week, and also to discuss why, even if they've dialed back on how many hikes they see next year, but why they're still more hawkish than investors want.
Well, the Fed was expected to raise a quarter point to the range of between 2.25% and 2.5%, and that's what they did. The problem was in projecting further rate hikes ahead while stocks and bonds are both voicing growth concerns. Now, the communication on the economy was nearly the same, Chris, from the November statement. So again, investors are just puzzled and scratching their heads why the Fed wants to continue raising in the face of what they're seeing is a market that's telling a very bearish story. On Tuesday, I read several articles written that many expect the Fed would dial back from an estimated 3 hikes in 2019 to 2 hikes, and that's exactly what we got. And that started a rally on Tuesday, but investors wanted a surprise dovish move. So a pause maybe after this hike would have been something that would have gone a long way to help the bulls stabilize the market, but we didn't get that. Powell did say during his conference they would be more data dependent in the future, so we'll just have to see if they continue to dial back the hawkish tone at the January meeting. Now, as soon as he finished his opening statement that was around 9 minutes long, there was a portion where he specifically said the Fed will be less supportive to the economy. So again, here, there's a big worry. The Fed is making a policy mistake here and is just avoiding any kind of communication from what the data really is saying. They're data dependent. Does that mean they're listening to the market? Doesn't seem so.
It's really a shame, though, with all of its transparency. I've found that sometimes a surprise is warranted. It seems to help stabilize markets, but unfortunately, it appears that's not their intention.
So the Fed's New York president, John Williams, held an interview on CNBC Friday trying to reassure the markets. So it appears some are trying to do just that. And he had several points to share. He said he doesn't see a direct effect from tariffs yet. He said the Fed is basically flexible in its views. And he said thinking that the U.S. could see strong wage gains next year. And so he felt that it is appropriate to see 2 more rate hikes next year. But by basically emphasizing the Fed is data dependent, he did try to reassure the market that they are listening, that they are essentially in that mode where being data dependent means they'll be flexible and listening to the market. And that caused the market to spike very briefly on Friday morning. And he said by being data dependent, that means they are listening to the markets. But rallies, Chris, they just continue to fade in this market even after those reassuring comments. The balance sheet reduction looks to be firmly set as there's just no talk or discussion about doing anything there. They will likely dial back their rate hikes first if they adjust anything. So it'd be they're trying to adjust the language, which they've done that by saying 3 hikes have now been dialed back down to 2 next year. Maybe we'll hear some more information in January. And just know that every single Fed policy statement will be followed up by a press conference with Powell. And so basically the thought is now every single meeting is a live meeting. And there also has been some expectations that maybe they don't raise a full 25 basis points. Maybe they do something less than that. Some were saying an estimated 20 basis points instead. Now, one more area of concern that has added to recent market and economic uncertainty is the political situation and the fallout from last week's meeting between the Democrats and Trump on spending and border security. So this week, Trump still wants a wall, and that dialogue continued this week when Paul Ryan said Trump will not sign a stopgap funding bill that does not include funding for a border wall. So there continues to be political uncertainty with now a Democratic Congress, Republican Senate, and a Republican president. You know, there were a lot of hopes, if you recall last year, that we would see deregulation in the financial markets, that we would see infrastructure spending and tax cuts. Also, pare back in the healthcare spending bill that would reduce maybe costs there. So far, we've only seen one of those. Likely, we won't see anything else with the ability of these two parties being able to compromise.
One area, Ryan, where I feel you particularly shine is on the side of technical analysis. So I'd like to shift over from your usual market wrap report to the technical conditions of the financial markets. Now, are you still seeing conditions that suggest the market is in risk-off mode? I know that you wrote an article earlier this week talking about a silver lining.
Well, yeah, the fact remains, even in that article, I really tried to focus on what is, as Stan Weinstein would always say, what is the 10 in his reports? What is the biggest thing to really be thinking about? Yes, there may be some silver linings, but the main thing is this. We're in a corrective mode, and we continue to see the weakness in economically sensitive areas of the market. So if things were to improve, those are the areas that have to improve first. So the financials, transports, energy, all capitulating. High-yield corporate bonds hit a new low on Thursday this year, all while defensive areas are holding up better in treasuries, the dollar, and utilities. Now, gold has also put in a major bottom and has done well this past couple of months despite a strong dollar, and maybe not despite, but because we're seeing both being strong, that's what we used to call the safety trade back in 2008. So we also think gold has been sniffing out a more dovish Fed since Powell's just below neutral comments a few weeks ago. Thursday, gold broke out above a 200-day moving average for the first time since it fell down right back in May. All while the dollar broke below its 50-day moving average really briefly, though the dollar is still in a tight trading range right now. Now, both may be speaking the minds of investors who think the Fed will likely need to continue to dial back on the hawkish language. Given the collapse in oil prices and growth slowdown concerns, I happen to agree with the market that they will need to continue to dial back.
Now, I imagine quite a number of our listeners are wondering if maybe we've corrected enough. Do you suppose that's the case? I mean, aren't we due for a bear market rally or something else significant? Do you feel, Ryan, that maybe sentiment could be too bearish?
Well, you hit the label of bear market, and typically we talk about a bear market being 20% or more. The NASDAQ just this week at a certain point hit a 20% correction from the highs to the low. Some of the others haven't quite hit that yet. And I know other technicians are categorically calling it a bear market. It feels like it, right? I mean, this correction has been very difficult. Back in the 2015 and 16 correction, that too felt very much like a new bear market was here, and we were proven wrong. But, you know, equity markets are oversold. And I was reading a newsletter by Jonathan Krinsky, another technician that comes on our show, said that oversold doesn't mean over. He also said that it's hard to bottom when leaders are topping. And he brought out a couple of charts that I'm looking at here. If you look at several of the blue chip darlings, that's Microsoft, Google, Boeing, and Visa, they're all putting in topping patterns that are on the cusp of rolling over. Now, the New York Stock Exchange FANG Index, that's an index we've brought up many, many times over the past 2 years, has rolled over and has confirmed a top like the market, the equities stock indices have put in. And that was an area of major momentum in 2017 and 18 for the market. So to see the weakness there, that's very telling. Other areas of strength, now let's look at the other side of things I've been following, have been in several consumer staples and telecom names. And I've actually seen a lot of weakness in those names as well. So and even the real estate sector was hit hard this week. And it seems that investors finally, even in conservative areas, are finally throwing in the towel. That's ripe, you know, conditions for a rally. Bear sentiment reigns supreme, and oversold conditions are here in oil stocks and even high yield bonds, of course. And so, like I said, on the flip side, overbought conditions are here in the dollar and treasuries. The percentage of stocks, Chris, this is something, this is an oversold or overbought indicator that I follow very closely, and so do many technicians. So we look at the percentage of stocks above the 200-day moving average. That has dropped down to levels we haven't seen since 2016. And is right now, last I checked, was the low on Friday was right around 12%. So that means 12% of the S&P 500 are in bull markets. The rest, bear markets. So many were looking at the Fed to provide the language on Wednesday to shore up sentiment. You know, the conditions are ripe for a powerful rally, but we need that catalyst. But it's clear that there's just no Fed or Trump put at this time.
Well, as Jim Cramer always says, there's a bull market somewhere. Where would you say is the shelter from this storm?
Well, some of those areas I already mentioned, it's been in treasuries, gold, and utilities. But what I was mentioning in my article on Tuesday was I was looking at the relative strength. Relative strength is when you compare one security to another and you chart that. And when you see a rising chart, that means the numerator is, you know, outperforming the denominator. And so in this case, what I'm doing is I'm taking the semiconductors and I'm dividing it by the S&P 500. And that's a line that's improved. We've started to see it, you know, it's been going down since June and has started to tick up. We're also seeing the same thing when we compare the emerging markets to the S&P 500. We're seeing a very clear established new trend to the upside in emerging markets. Now, that doesn't mean those markets are headed higher. That just means they're going down less than the others. And those are typically risk-on areas you want to see improving near market bottoms. So that's an area that you want to see as giving some warning that they're not going down as much as the S&P 500 is. Again, that could signal a possible warning that those areas are done falling. They, of course, need to reverse before we say that a bottom is in. Now, emerging markets may be anticipating more agreement news between the Chinese and the U.S. since the ceasefire at the G20 a couple of weeks ago, and then also last week's Chinese auto import tariff reduction from 40% to 15% for 3 months. That's helping emerging markets because when you look at the MSCI Emerging Market Index, it holds a concentration of around 30% in Chinese markets. So continued trade progress, that's going to be a great thing for the emerging markets as well as the Chinese markets. But I also think it's technical when the dollar is trading sideways for a few weeks. If we see the dollar roll over, that could be beneficial to the emerging markets. It could be also beneficial to precious metals as well. So those two areas would definitely benefit if the dollar did roll over. Not to mention maybe U.S. stocks as well. We'll have to see.
Well, thank you, Ryan, for both the wrap-up and filling in as the technician this week on short notice. And a heads up to our listeners, the U.S. markets will be closing early at 1 o'clock Eastern and then will be closed for Christmas Day on Tuesday. So thank you again, Ryan. Well, it's the season to be jolly unless you are an investor. And instead of Santa Claus rally, we got the Fed becoming the Grinch who stole Christmas. And instead of candy canes and presents, the Fed delivered a lump of coal. At least on Wall Street and for investors, it looks like there'll be no ho-ho-ho this Christmas as falling stock prices and rising volatility spread gloom in living rooms across the country. Now, the Fed met this week and they raised interest rates a quarter of a point as expected. The language and press conference accompanying the meeting delivered more angst than calm to the investment markets. And right now, the Fed is betting that the markets have it wrong. The economic data is better than what markets are anticipating or believe is coming. But there are a number of well-respected voices rising who now believe the Fed has made and is making a major mistake. Now, Jim, you have a saying when it comes to Fed rate raising cycles that they'll keep raising rates until something breaks, either in the stock market or in the economy, and in the end, both. So here we are in what is now the 13th rate raising cycle. There have been 12 cycles that preceded this one, with 11 of them leading to a recession. So as you do often mention, they've got a good track record of usually crashing the airplane. Well, it looks like they may just do that again.
You started out in such a Christmas spirit mode about the Grinch and the stockings and coal. I thought you were going to go right into The Night Before Christmas. So anyway, we've, you know, as you mentioned, Chris, we've commented this year in what makes this rate cycle different, and this is really important, is that the Fed is raising rates when the government is trying to stimulate the economy with fiscal stimulus. I haven't seen this in my entire investment career up until now. So for the years, and you take a look at the last, what, 7 or 8 years of the Obama administration when the Fed had interest rates at zero, they were urging Congress and the president to implement fiscal stimulus because the Fed felt that they were carrying the load of stimulating the economy. So when they did, which is what happened with the tax law that went into effect this year, now they're moving aggressively to counteract the stimulus through rate hikes. And more importantly, they're doing something they haven't done before. They're shrinking their balance sheet, which is withdrawing liquidity. And basically, right now, they're strangulating the financial markets. One reason the financial markets reacted negatively to this week's press conference is when asked about plans concerning shrinking the Fed's balance sheet, Chairman Powell responded by saying the Fed was committed to steadily letting its crisis-era holdings of Treasury and mortgage bonds to run off as planned following a strategy they initiated last year. So it isn't just the fact the Fed is raising interest rates, which is creating stresses, as we now see in the economy, and slowing economic growth. It is also having the reverse effect of QE. In order to stimulate the economy after the last recession, the Fed embarked on a program of QE, buying treasuries and mortgage-backed securities to the tune of almost $4.3 trillion. And the idea was simple. By increasing demand for these safe assets, the prices would rise and consequently interest rates would fall, which is what happened. This not only eased financial conditions, you know, look at what mortgage rates fell to. I mean, it's hard to believe 2 years ago you could get a 3.5% 30-year mortgage. But also by reducing borrowing rates, it pushed investors into buying riskier stocks, corporate bonds, in order to find better returns. Think of what you were getting at the bank up until a couple of years ago. You were getting zero. Money market funds were at zero interest rates, and treasuries in the summer of 2016 got down to a little over 1%. So I don't know why they would think by doing the reverse would not have any effect on the financial markets. Just goes to show you how little they understand about what they are now doing. In effect, they're doubling their tightening by not just raising interest rates, which is what we tend to focus on, but making it more expensive to borrow. They are also removing liquidity from the financial markets, which is having multiple effects. And we can see it. The stock market is down. Credit spreads are way up. Bank and financial stocks are plunging. The dollar is stronger and wreaking havoc in emerging markets. So, in essence, a lot of people are saying the Fed is missing the bigger picture here with regard to their balance sheet. If you believe that QE helped financial markets, how can you not believe that unwinding will absolutely do nothing?
Well, I'm not sure I understand the QT thing they're doing. I understand that raising interest rates is not a good thing because it raises the cost of borrowing. And now what we're seeing when it comes to housing and autos, that's been in a downturn since late spring. Mortgage rates and loan rates on buying cars has already risen. But Jim, explain the QT thing.
You know, very simple. After the crisis, the Fed bought assets by crediting bank reserve accounts, which increased the cash that would be available for short-dated lending activity. As the Fed shrinks its balance sheet and its assets decline, so do bank reserves, which means they're reducing the money available for things such as overnight repo trades, or where cash is lent in return for treasuries, or we're seeing it in the commercial paper market, where corporations can borrow cash for short periods. So in effect, this is another form of tightening. So you are now seeing the opposite effect, which is a negative for credit spreads and equities, which is what is hitting the corporate bond market right now with widening spreads. And of course, we're seeing this play out in the stock market.
Well, you know, many experts, Jim, have been critical of the Yellen Fed for leaving interest rates far too low for a really long period of time. They feel the Fed should have raised rates much sooner than what they did. But now many of those same experts feel the Fed has gone too far. I mean, if you consider the increasing debt levels in our economy and the fact that they're doing two forms of tightening with raising interest rates and QT.
You know, I want to go to a clip that addresses that, Chris, with the recent interview of Stanley Druckenmiller. If you're not familiar with him, he ran Duquesne Partners, but he was also a former partner of George Soros. He was credited, along with Soros, in bringing down the Bank of England and forcing them to devalue their currency in 1992. Now, he's been a vocal critic of the Fed, both when they were too loose and also when they are too tight, as they are now, and more importantly, the dangers they pose to the financial system. And I want to go to that one clip from Bloomberg. Let's go to that now.
I still believe, could be wrong, we'll never know, counterfactuals don't seem to work, had Bernanke recognized what was going on when, to be fair, 20 to 50 money managers did in early to mid 07, that this was not a little $100 billion problem that was containable, but that it was a disaster looming. And had he cut 6 to 9 months earlier, we would have had a recession, but I don't know whether we would have had a financial crisis, and we certainly would not have had the consequences we've had. So let's fast forward. As you know, a few years ago, I started saying if you wanted to create a deflationary bust, I would do exactly what the Fed was doing. Since 2010, corporate non-financial debt has grown from $6 trillion to $9.6 trillion. Where I'm from, that's about a 60% increase. During that time, corporate earnings increased 27%. So how in the world did the S&P earnings increase 60%? It's because all that borrowed money went to finance buybacks and M&A. So this entire trillions and trillions of dollars that, to my mind, were as a result of investors being pushed by the Fed to go out on the risk curve, take more risk, resulted in a big debt built up, resulted in Donald Trump feeling comfortable doing more fiscal spending, resulted in Barack Obama saying he did not want to balance the budget on the backs of old people, so there were no entitlement cuts. So essentially, the bond market, which would traditionally have been a vigilante from all this sort of behavior, market signals were canceled. We developed yet another bubble, and we're now sort of in the position, potentially, and I want to say potentially, where we were in early 07.
So like 2007, when there were many, including ourselves, that warned of financial dangers of what the Fed was doing by remaining tight and restrictive, there are a few now, and I would include our own views here, that believe, Chris, the Fed is ignoring the danger signs, which can be seen everywhere you look today.
Well, Jim, let's talk about those danger signs. What are you seeing that poses danger, and what are others seeing and warning investors?
You know, they just don't see how bad the markets are today. Let's begin with economic growth. We began this year with synchronized global economic growth. Just think back to January when the stock market, week after week, at least the first 4 weeks of the year, were hitting new records. In fact, during the first couple of weeks of the year, we already hit the forecast for the S&P, which ran between 2750 and 2850. We actually got above 2850 in the first month. Confidence was high that things were going great, and especially with major economic stimulus coming from the U.S. Then as the Fed tightened further, we saw turmoil erupt first overseas in emerging markets. Then it spread as China's economy slowed down as a result of policy and the trade war with the U.S. Trade contracted, and we saw that impact Germany and Japan, whose economies contracted in the third quarter. So we don't know if it's just a one-quarter slowdown, or if indeed, if it continues, Germany and Japan are really in a recession. Emerging markets collapsed into bear market territory, which is where they remain today. They're down about 24% this year. And now finally, it has begun to impact our markets here, with all the major markets in negative territory for the year, and the NASDAQ on the verge of entering bear market territory. So to the average passive investor in an index fund, it doesn't look that bad so far. But look below the surface and you can see multiple signs of stress forming. For example, financial stocks are down over 20%, with the big bank stocks down even further. Housing stocks are down 25 to 30%. Auto stocks like Ford, GM are down over 30%. Energy stocks are down about 25%, with crude prices falling 35%, which I don't think will last, as I will have more to say about this sector next month. But something doesn't seem right here.
Well, Jim, you know, you were talking about to the average investor that things don't appear to look that bad, but I have noticed some headlines. I think that people are starting to smell something. I mean, something feels different, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, stock markets are down around the globe, which now includes U.S. Credit spreads are widening as we see today. The financial sector is plunging. The yield curve is inverted on the short end and is very close to inverting on the long end. The dollar is rising. Commodity prices are collapsing everywhere from copper to oil. On top of that, political and financial headwinds look set to create the toughest backdrop in several years. And next year, Chris, Washington could become toxic. The Fed seems oblivious to all of these things. I mean, they've made some mention, well, we're seeing a few things of stress, but they really didn't emphasize it. The only dovish comments they made in the meeting this week is that instead of 3 rate hikes next year, well, it may end up being just 2. But they said their QT program of tightening liquidity would continue unabated. And this is the problem when you rely on old, outdated models that don't work and are irrelevant if you're always looking through the rearview mirror. Something is amiss here, and they don't get it, which is why they usually crash the plane. Now, Druckenmiller made reference to this not being right in his Bloomberg interview.
If you look at the coincident economic indicators, which I wish the Fed did, they actually look at lagging indicators. But if you look at the coincident ones, they all look quite good. GDP has a 3 handle, so forth and so on. If you look at the indicators I have historically used in my business, they're not quite red yet, but they are
They're not red yet, but what?
But they are definitely amber, and they are setting off warning signs.
What do you see?
Okay, so the best economist I know is the inside of the stock market. And I'm sure you've heard Herrick the joke, and I heard it at Bowdoin in my Economics 1 class, the stock market's predicted 9 out of the last 5 recessions. I will say with all humility, that's better than the Fed. They've gone 0 for 9, so 9 out of 5 is not that terrible. But the best economist I know out there is the inside of the stock market. So the Fed, when they look at the stock market and they look at financial indicators, probably is just looking at the S&P. But the decline in the S&P, which is funny, when I was preparing for this interview, it was 10, it's now 13, is a bit of a mirage. Because if you look inside the stock market, the cyclical elements of the economy, particularly the front-end cyclicals, show a completely different picture than the defensive parts of the stock market.
The stuff that's more sensitive
to the economy. So auto stocks are down 30%. They're not down 10 or 11, they're down 30. Building stocks are down 35. Banks, which you would think might be a symbol of credit or something else, are down 25%. The Russell 2000 is down over 20%. Retail equities are down over 20%. So how in the world could the S&P only be down 10 or 11 when I was looking at these numbers? It's because utilities, staples, and pharmaceuticals, which are economically defensive, are actually up. And this is the same situation I use cycle after cycle. So that's one of the things. The inside of the stock market, which is the best economist I know and which I've used every cycle when I've invested, is saying there's something not right here.
So there you have Druckenmiller saying that two of the best predictors of serious problems, the stock market's internals and a flattening yield curve, are flashing warning signs right now, and they seem oblivious to it, just as they were in 2001, again in 2007, and some would say now again in 2018.
Jim, is this common, though? I mean, do things happen like dominoes that quickly? It just seems like it was an abrupt happening from the plunge in oil to the plunge in stock prices. What changed?
Chris, this is usually what occurs when you get to the end of a rate-raising cycle. When the Fed first begins to tighten, the markets view it as a positive. In other words, they're saying, oh, the Fed thinks the economy is strong enough to take it off a heroin drip. So the economy is strong enough to begin normalizing interest rates. So at the beginning, usually the markets react favorably. And this is what happened between 2016 and until recently. But eventually, those rate hikes begin to bite as rates head higher. And as higher interest rates discount future earnings at higher rates, which ends up resulting in lower PE multiples. Even though earnings are going up, the PE multiple is coming down, investors are unwilling to pay more for those earnings. This time, however, the Fed is also removing liquidity through the financial system with its QT program. And this is when you find out who's swimming naked as the tide goes out, to quote Warren Buffett. The trouble this time is what we have been discussing here on the program is the corporate bond market. As Druckenmiller pointed out, corporate debt is up over 60%. And just think of all those mergers, acquisitions, stock buybacks. This year, corporate M&A activity could hit a record $3 trillion, which is up about 50% from previous cycles. And if you look at the corporate debt market, one-third is rated BBB, which could get downgraded in a recession. One-third is rated junk, and only one-third is considered to be quality. All of that debt is sitting in these bond funds and bond ETFs. And here's the problem. As credit spreads widen, much of this debt will be sold and forced sales as credit ratings are lowered. I mean, if you run, let's say, an investment-grade mutual fund or ETF, and you're sitting on BBB bonds, and those bonds get downgraded to BB or B, you are going to be forced to sell those. Financing is going to become more difficult as defaults grow and as banks tighten credit. And that's what happens. Once you start seeing default rates rise, then banks kind of batten the hatches and they tighten credit. And we're seeing that happen now and have seen several instances where liquidity on issues has disappeared, forcing prices to plummet. And some companies, like in the case of Toys R Us, to basically fold. But this all began, when you think about it, back in September, when Chairman Powell spooked the market when he made a speech making reference that the Fed was far away from policy neutral. Now, what did that imply? It implied that they were going to start raising rates a whole lot more than what the market was anticipating. And that was made in last week, in September, when the stock market peaked. When you think about it, we were hitting record levels in September. We thought the storms would arrive in September. Instead of that volatility and storms, we got record stock prices, and they were continuing to go up because what was going on? The economy was growing at a fast clip. It grew at 4.2% in Q2. It was at 3.5% in the third quarter. Earnings were growing at 25%. All of that was positive until Powell opened his mouth and said, you know what, guys, we're a long way from neutral. That means we're going to be raising interest rates a lot more aggressively. What happened? A week later, the stock market peaked, and it's been downhill ever since then, with the Fed removing that statement that policy would remain accommodative and remaining recalcitrant in its persistence of pursuing QT, which they even did this week when questioned by reporters, when they said, when are you going to maybe stop shrinking the balance sheet? And basically, Powell said, we have no intention. We're going to proceed as we have been doing so far. And about the only, let's say, token that he offered the market is, well, maybe next year, instead of three times, we'll only raise interest rates two times.
I guess what's hard to follow is just that all of these things that would be present and cause the Fed to raise interest rates in the past, like, for example, rising inflation, an overheating economy, stock market bubble, even inflationary wage increases. Those things aren't present right now. The economy, it seems like it's barely grown more than 2% or less for the last 9 years. Now we finally get 3%. We finally get a 3% economic growth, and then they just seem hell-bent to slow it down. Now, stocks aren't cheap, but they certainly are not in a bubble like they were back in 2000. So while the unemployment rate's at the lowest in over four decades, inflation is tame. So for the first time in nearly a decade, wages are rising, but they're not out of control. And I've been watching the slide in oil, Jim. Oil prices, which were feeding into inflation, have recently plummeted by 35%, yet they continue to raise rates. And they say that they'll continue to do so, but maybe only two times next year instead of three. So I don't know. I mean, none of what they're doing seems to make sense to me. Unwittingly, it just seems to lead to another financial crisis of their own making.
And here's the problem. The problem is the institution itself. I mean, the Fed lives inside, in my mind, a bubble. Their models are flawed. And let me give you an example. The Phillips curve that says as the unemployment rate drops, inflation increases automatically. That might have worked probably in the 70s before globalization and automation and the age of robots, but it certainly isn't true today. I mean, when Yellen was Fed chair, she talked about the neutral rate for unemployment was somewhere in the neighborhood of 5.5 and 6. We went through 5.5. We got down into the 4 level, and now we're at around 3.7%. Where is the raging inflation that this model would imply? It's not there. We're already seeing warning signs on top of that everywhere, but they have their blinders on. Although we do not see any signs, at least right now, of a recession, let's say in the next 6 months, because there's a huge amount of stimulus in the pipeline. But here's the key. That stimulus fades as we enter the second half of next year. What happened is this year in January, in addition to the tax cuts that went into effect, there was an additional $300 billion spending bill that was to take place between fiscal year 2018 and 2019. The government's fiscal year ends in September of next year, and that stimulus will run out. Now, if they continue to hike and contract their balance sheet, and if the political environment in Washington turns toxic as Democrats take control of the House and investigate instead of legislate, we could end up in a recession in the latter part of 2019.
We've had 8 years of free money, and the kind of excesses and pushing people out in the yield curves that's created, it's just a time for caution that you want this bubble to unwind slowly now, because if you don't, and let's say these indicators turn red, you may have to do a lot more crazy monetary stuff, and actually it'll be more of a problem in terms of someone like me who eventually wants to normalize, wants to deleverage. That's the train I've been on, I understand. But this isn't an effort to let that bubble out slowly. Someone, I believe, used the term 3 or 4 years ago that this is a beautiful deleveraging taking place. I have no idea what he was talking about. How do you have a beautiful deleveraging with U.S. debt going through the roof at the government level and corporate non-financial debt growing at the rate it was? So what I'm asking for now is not a cut, just to take stock of everything I've said and wait and see what happens.
It sounds like he's worried here, Jim. It also sounds like you're worried here and have gone even more defensive with your clients. Can they not see the road to perdition that they're on?
You know, this all gets back to the levels of debt in every sector of our economy. You heard Druckenmiller talk about corporate debt is up about 60%. And as our friend Barry Bannister at Stifel Nicolaus has recently written, if you take a look at the Fed rate raising cycles going all the way back to, let's say, the 80s, every Fed rate raising cycle has ended in lower interest rates in every single economic cycle since the early 80s. It has taken lower levels of interest rates, in other words, lower levels of Fed rate hikes, to bring on a recession as debt built up in the economy. So when you have more debt, higher level of interest rate has a more immediate impact because the debt levels are larger. In the last great recession, if we take a look at going back to 2007 and 2009, the Fed had to resort to unconventional monetary policy to forestall a Great Depression, which they managed to avoid. So kudos to them for doing so. But here's the problem. They brought rates down to zero and kept them there for 7 years. They also exploded their balance sheet in the process. They know we will experience sooner or later another recession. In other words, the government hasn't repealed the business cycle. So they want to reload the chamber with bullets to fight the next recession, which is why they want to keep hiking interest rates so they can lower them again to stimulate the economy when the next recession arrives. They will more than likely resort to some form of QE as well. The problem is they kept interest rates far too low for far too long, and now they find themselves in a problem of their own making. So I understand sort of why they're doing this. They want to normalize things. However, in the process of trying to renormalize, they may end up bringing about the next recession in that process.
Well, let's go ahead and boil this down for investors. What would you recommend that they do? Should they be raising cash right now, going to the mattress, jumping out of a window, or should they be calling you?
You know, if you've been a listener to this program, you know we've been talking about de-risking. We've been doing that all year. You know, I don't believe, depending on your age, you should be 100% invested in the stock market. You should have raised some cash, be in short-term quality bonds. And, you know, it's a little different now. In 2018, at least you're getting paid on money market funds, on short-term bonds. Interest rates have gone up. A couple of years ago, I couldn't have said that. You would have gotten zero at the bank or zero in a money market fund. Now, at some point, as the market goes straight down, as we've been doing since October, we're going to see a rally. And maybe that could occur next month. Who knows? Or maybe in the next week, Santa will finally arrive. But those rallies should be used to either trade or raise cash and then invest in perhaps short-term bonds so you don't sacrifice income if you're a pension plan or, for example, you're retired and relying on your investments for income. I don't see the risk of a recession in the next 3 to 6 months. There's just too much stimulus right now, either in the form of tax cuts that are still in place or government spending that will eventually run out. But if the Fed continues on its present course, we're eventually going to have one. Next year, at least in our opinion, is going to be more volatile than this one, as there are just too many cross currents for the markets to remain stable or in a long-term uptrend. Markets love certainty. And I can't think of any place on the globe, whether you're looking at financial markets or asset classes or even geopolitics or our own political system, where you see certainty. So you want to be on defense, which is one reason right now we're 60% in cash and short-term bonds.
Well, I want to get an idea, Jim, of how firmly you hold to this. I mean, I know that with the storm we talked about, it came a little later than you had forecast, but it came. What would you say are the odds of this playing out the way that you see things unfolding?
You know, Chris, I believe that the odds are pretty high given the cross currents we've been addressing on this program this year. Now, let me give you a view from the 40,000-foot level, looking out over the next decade, which is the way I like to view markets. I believe the next bear market will be fast and furious. In other words, this isn't going to play out over several years, like, for example, the last one, which began in 2007 and ended in March of 2009. This one's going to be fast and furious, with the markets losing maybe 30, 40% or more very quickly. And the reason is program trading, machines controlling the market, and the vast amount of money in index funds. So just as you've seen the corrections this year give back gains for the year, for example, going back to February, where we gave back all the gains for the year in just 6 days, or more recently in just a couple of weeks. Now, when the recession arrives, I believe it's going to be short-lived as the government initiates, let's say, a massive stimulus in the form of infrastructure spending. Both parties have been talking about this. The president has been talking about this. So this is the likely outcome if we get into a recession. There won't be, however, the money to pay for it. We're already running trillion-dollar deficits, which is why I think the Fed will end up monetizing government debt to pay for it. So the next cycle, I believe, is going to be inflationary, which is why I like hard assets, for example, energy, precious metals. And in fair disclosure, I am an owner of both, along with treasuries and short-term quality bonds. But as I look at the future, I'm reminded of a quote, Chris, from my friend, the late Kennedy Gamage. I remember in his newsletter, he had a graph of market cycles between paper and things, and he quoted Ecclesiastes. There's a time for everything and a season for every activity under heaven. Now, he quoted that scripture in his newsletter with the chart of market cycles alternating between paper and things. If you think about it, the last decade was a decade of hard assets, a period when commodities, real estate, gold, silver, and oil did extremely well. This decade, the cycle has been a cycle of paper assets, when stocks and bonds did well. Treasury yields came down from 5% down to 1%. The stock market went from 666 all the way up to almost 2,900. So it's my belief that the next decade and cycle will be inflationary, a time when ownership of hard assets will do well. But yet that time is yet ahead of us. We need to worry about the present.
Well, Jim, I appreciate your giving us an idea of how you see things unfolding as we approach the new year. And to our listeners, folks, this is our last show of the year. And here at Financial Sense, we'll be reprising some of our favorite and most listened to shows to round out the rest of the year. But we don't want to go without wishing our faithful listeners the happiest of holidays and a very happy new year.
And as you mentioned, Chris, this will be our, well, last week was supposed to be our last show of the year, but given the events of the week, we came back this week, and we will begin next year with our annual forecast show. So unless between now and, let's say, New Year's, unless Santa's sleigh crashes or they kidnap Rudolph the reindeer, we'll be talking to you again next year, and we wish you once again a happy holiday and a prosperous new year.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.